When we met last year, we'd really only just started. We didn't have any national distributors, and we just had a very simple range of beans and peas. Since then, we've been working with a number of farmers to bring a whole range of new products to the market. So we're working with organic farmers, so the peas and beans that were previously conventional and were being grown for export, we're now working with organic farms so that we can add an organic bean and pea range to what we offer. And what's really exciting is that we're finding that farmers are really receptive to this. They're really keen to do this, and it's an opportunity that they've wanted but have felt very nervous about, because the global commodity markets are very volatile. So the idea of planting beans and peas to sell into that market is not very attractive to farmers, and they are naturally risk averse because it's a difficult job anyway without getting into those kind of complications. So that's been really exciting, and the farmers are really keen, and we're getting lots of photographs of the farm, we're getting lots of information to communicate with people that are interested in buying the beans and peas and telling that story, which has already been told for things like meat and vegetables and dairy products. We're all very conscious of where our food is coming from, but that's not really happened with beans and peas, which come from Canada or China or Turkey, but could just as easily come from the UK. So we're really keen to tell that story and to work with farmers to communicate why they're important in agricultural rotations, why they're good for health, and why we should be eating more of them.
One of the products that you have now developed is a range of canned products. Why did you choose the range of dishes that you did in these canned products?
Yeah, so there are three canned products to start with. We've created a dal using a Gujarati recipe for Val dal, and that's one of the first dishes we made ourselves at home with the split fava beans, and we really loved it, and we thought we'd like to share this more widely. So we worked with a contract can, and we've worked on that recipe in order to produce something which isn't quite the same as the dal we cook at home, but is all the same delicious, and it's actually our best-selling line. That's an organic Val dal made with the split fava beans. So that's gone really well. Then we've got a whole fava bean in water, and so that's just a plain bean that you could add to a stew, you could use in a salad, just like a kidney bean or any other kind of bean that you might get in a can like that. And the reason we did that is because for a lot of people, soaking the beans and then coming back the next day and cooking the beans, that's quite a process. And so kind of in recognition of the fact that people need something that's a little bit easier, we put that in a can, and that's obviously giving a wider audience the opportunity to try the beans. And then the other one, which is really, really nice and really fun, I think, is British baked beans. So although everyone's kind of aware that baked beans are originally an American idea, they're such a part of the fabric of British culture. You know, everyone has baked beans for tea or baked beans on toast at a cafe or something like that. But of course, with the exception of the water, probably all the ingredients are imported. So we thought, wouldn't it be nice to put a British bean into baked beans? So again, we're using the fava bean, and it's a meatier, darker, richer bean than the haricots or navy beans that are traditionally used. And we think it's a really delicious baked bean, a very grown-up baked bean.
The baked bean is a very iconic dish in the UK,
yeah,
as you say. What has the public's response been to your reinvention?
Yeah, it's been really positive. I think in the UK, unlike in the US and in Canada, we have a very fixed idea about what a baked bean is. And that's essentially a white bean in a sweet red sauce, which is what Heinz did. And of course, that's what everyone expects. And our beans are not like that. They're a dark bean in a dark sauce, and they've got a very different flavour profile. And yet in the US and in Canada, there are a whole range of different types, barbecue beans, beans with maple syrup in them, you know, different types of beans used to create a baked bean. And, you know, individual diners and things will have their own bean recipe that they'll use and that they'll sell to their customers. And people are very open to that diversity. We found in the UK that there is definitely a core of people who are really interested in trying something a bit different, both cafes and home consumers and all sorts of people. And the baked bean market is massive. I mean, it's unbelievably big. We're not going to knock Heinz out of business, but we are certainly very keen to develop a very distinctive niche for a very different kind of product, which people are really enjoying.
What you're saying is very much what Harmer Dodds is all about, trying something different, I think. Talking about something different, your product that really excites me most is your British-grown quinoa. Traditional quinoa is grown in the South Americas. How do they grow in the UK?
Yeah, well, it grows really well. It's a chenopodium, a goosefoot, and obviously it's a South American, it's an indigenous South American plant and agricultural crop, and it's domesticated there, but it's related to fat hen, which we get in the UK, and which is an agricultural weed. And we'd seen this for years working with farmers. We'd seen this growing in fields of brassicas and things and thought, if only there was a market for fat hen. It's a nice sort of spinachy leaf crop, but there's no real market for it. So when we started to think about quinoa, and we thought, well, actually, it's in that family that the fat hen is in, so surely it must grow in the UK. And we started speaking to farmers about it and saying, could this stuff be grown? And it dawned on us that it was already being grown. It's grown as a cover crop for pheasants and as wild bird seed mix. And farmers often sow it in margins around the edges of their fields for pheasants and for birds, for wild birds. So we went to one of the farmers that we knew was growing the seed for this wild bird mix and said, would you be prepared to consider growing it for people rather than for pheasants? And he said, oh, I tried that 25 years ago, but no one was really interested. I said, well, things have really changed. Let's look again. So for the last 12, 18 months, we've been working with Peter Fares, who's a farmer in Essex, just outside Colchester, on low saponin varieties. Now quinoa comes with a protective seed coating, which is saponin, which is soapy, bitter. But there are varieties that don't have that. A lot of South American quinoa does have it and has to be washed. We wanted to find a variety that didn't need washing so that we could harvest it and bag it and sell it straight away. So we've selected a strain from Peter, which Peter's been selecting actually for a number of years, that is low in saponin. It grows very well. It grows like a weed, just like the fat hen does. The difficult thing is at the beginning and the end of the season. So it's a very small seed to sow, so establishing it is quite difficult. Once it's growing, it's very competitive. And then at the end of the season, harvesting it is difficult. Now, it needs a dry week or two at the beginning of September. And in the UK, we're not known for our guaranteed dry Septembers. Essex is probably the best place for it. And what happens is that Peter will go out and he'll cut the quinoa plants down. He'll swath them like hay into rows. And then a week later, he'll go out with the combine and he'll pick up what he's swathed, and the combine will strip the seeds from the plants. But if it rains in that intervening week, then the quinoa, which is very keen to germinate, will do exactly that. It will germinate. So it's a slight gamble. But this year, we've produced 4.5 tons from a trial planting. Next year, we're hoping to have tens of tons available. And Peter is very confident that he can pick that window in September and that it'll be okay. So we're in his hands on that one, but he's pretty calm about it. In fact, last year, I think he even went on holiday during that week. That's how confident he was. It wouldn't rain in Essex. So we're really looking forward to that coming in. And there's been a lot of excitement. We've had a lot of coverage in the national media as well about it, because this is a product where there's been a bit like tulip fever, or, you know, there's been a real bubble, a price bubble from the South American, huge demand. That's having big impact environmentally, socially, economically in the original source countries. So people who would have traditionally eaten quinoa, which were the poor people, a bit like fava beans are for us, poor people's food, it wasn't a middle class food. And now those people can't access it because the price has gone up so much. And because such huge quantities are being grown without much regard for a very delicate agroecosystem in that part of America, they're damaging their soils and it's having all sorts of negative side effects. So the answer, I suppose, really is that we should be looking to buy from organic and fair trade co-ops from those countries, and picking up on the fact that this is the source of the grain, the mother grain as it's called, and really choosing that carefully. But where we're looking for perhaps an ingredient product, there's no reason why we shouldn't use British. And I think the British-grown quinoa, it's delicious, it's got a nutty flavour, and I think that probably in years to come there'll be a lot more of it grown, not just by us, actually, but by a lot of other farmers as well.
Well, it's really exciting. I mean, the things that stick out to me are 1 week of no rain, pheasants, human consumption and globalised food, and British-grown, of course.
Yes, that's right, yeah. Yeah, and what I mean, what's really interesting is there are a whole load of other crops, a bit like quinoa, that aren't grown here, but that could be. And we're looking at those too, and we're very keen to experiment with those and to find farmers that would be interested in trying things. For example, naked barley. It's still grown in some parts of the UK, particularly in Shetland and Orkney Isles, where it's called bear. And it's a barley without the husk that's stuck to the grain. And it's the old form, the Bronze Age form of barley that we always used to eat, a bit like with some of the other products that we do. If you're spotting a theme, it's very good for you. And because it doesn't have to be cleaned so aggressively, it doesn't have to be polished like pearl barley does, it's a much more of a whole grain and it's much more nutritiously beneficial. So we're looking for farmers that would be keen to grow that. And we've got some small amounts that we're working on this year. So that's our next project. There are some others as well. So the beans that we've grown in the UK since the Iron Age are from one family, and they came from originally from the Middle East, probably, although there's no wild relative left. They're totally domesticated, but probably somewhere from the Middle East around the time when settled agriculture began. But there are a whole group of other beans, the Phaseolus families, which come from the Americas, New World beans, as opposed to our Old World beans, which we discovered when we discovered America. And they're very difficult to grow here because they need a slightly longer growing season. So in order to harvest them, you need more than just a week of dry weather in September. However, we found some farmers that have been working with Phaseolus group beans for some years, and it's a project that's been ongoing really since the 70s. We think that there is a real opportunity, and we've got a few tons already of several varieties, a small red haricot bean, which is a bit like a kidney bean to eat, and we're working on a larger, actually it's a runner bean for drying, a bit like Greek gigantes beans, and that's a delicious creamy bean, and we're hoping that certainly the small red haricot will be ready in a few months' time, and we'll be selling that, so look out for it. And the gigantes, our trials are expanding this year. We might have small amounts for sale by the autumn. These are products that haven't previously come to market because the farmers have always seen them as a potential commodity. What we're saying is these are a niche product that if we are able to communicate to people how they're grown and why they're grown and why they're different, there's a small premium that makes them a better bet for farmers in terms of growing them, and they can be more confident about planting them and not feeling that they're going to have to compete with their red beans on the global market for red beans, which is very, very variable. So, interesting times.
I mean, the idea is very, very tangible. It's almost too obvious. And it also challenges the idea about what progress in agriculture actually is.
Yeah, I mean, I think the kind of global market for beans and pulses is becoming increasingly vulnerable. Obviously, population is growing, demand is growing. A lot of these beans are put into animal feeds and things. For example, this year, there was a global shortage of organic green and yellow split peas. Traditionally, they're bought from Canada and imported into the UK. We can grow them here. There's no reason why we can't. We can't grow them as cheaply as the Canadians can. This year, the Americans, the US, bought all of those, and the Canadians said, well, we're not going to bother sending them to Europe. So for the last 8 months, no one has been able to access those products. So things are changing in that sense. And I think climate change, population growth, making a lot of these supply chains very vulnerable. And we need to be looking at... It really ties into the whole issue around food sovereignty and how we protect our supply chains and how we ensure that we've got access to what are really very basic commodities. And being able to constantly say, well, we're a developed Western nation, we'll always be able to buy on the global commodity market, which is what DEFRA was saying for a number of years, we'll always be able to buy these things because we'll have the spending power. That's not going to be the case. The emerging economies are going to say, no, well, we're going to buy all of that, we're going to protect that, or we need to be thinking a bit more sensibly about both our agricultural system and our diet and about where we get our food from. So, yeah.
This is all very true, and I wish you all the very best going forward. So, finally, as always, I'm sure this has changed since I last spoke to you. Where can people now get your Hodmadods, and how can they find out more about you?
Well, we have a website, hodmadods.co.uk, which I'm sure will be in your piece, and you can buy directly from us on that website. We're also now working with a number of national distributors, people like Suma, Tree of Life, Infinity, Essential, Green City up in Scotland, and a number of others. And what has happened as that's happened is that our products are now in a huge range of Whole Food shops and independent retailers. So it's hard for me to give a specific list anymore, but go into your local shop. If you'd like to buy them, ask them to stock them, and I can guarantee you that their wholesaler will be able to supply them, and that would be great. That's the way forward.